3CR would like to acknowledge the Kulin Nation, true owners, caretakers, and custodians of the land from which we broadcast. 3CR pays respect to elders past and present of the Kulin Nation. We recognize their unceded sovereignty.
This is 3CR Breakfast. Oh, yeah. Alternative news, analysis, and current affairs. Monday to Friday, 7 a.m. to 8:30 a.m.
Only double.
Grab your pants.
Good morning, listeners. You're listening to the Monday Breakfast Show with me and Rob. Hey.
Good morning.
Morning.
It's both of us back in the studio for the first time in like
a while.
A month.
Yeah. What's been happening?
I got tonsillitis.
Oh.
Which, as I said to you off air, I...
Not the litis.
Yeah, misheard my housemate telling me I needed antibiotics, so I thought I didn't need antibiotics for a week, so...
Like, I don't... Yeah.
I was just rotting. And I literally went to work last week on Tuesday, and I couldn't speak.
Yeah.
Like, I tried to speak, and my voice was like, I don't know, really high-pitched. So everyone I was speaking to at work just like, oh, we can't speak to Rob.
Oh, my God.
So we're all just working together, and they're all just, like, talking to themselves, and then I'm just like...
Yeah, like, cool. I used to get tonsillitis all the time.
Yeah.
Now I can spot it real good.
Yeah.
You should have sent me a pic.
It was bad. Like, I went to the GP and they were like, yep.
Yeah.
You've got tonsillitis.
Yeah.
You should have been here like a week ago. And I was like, well, I misheard my housemate telling me. I thought she said I didn't need antibiotics.
You're like, perfect. I don't need it. That's funny.
Yeah. But I saw Extortion on Saturday night. I don't know if you know who they are.
Nice.
Like a hardcore punk power violence band.
Love that.
At Last Chance. It's my first time at Last Chance Bar.
True. I went there after the I'm on the Sniffers gig that didn't happen at Third Square by accident. And then they had free drinks. So I was like, woo.
Whoa.
Yeah.
That would have been pretty, like, because it's such a small space.
Yeah, it was packed.
So it would have been, like, even on Saturday, like, Extortion was sold out.
Yeah.
So it was pretty cramped.
Yeah, I went to the Tote on Saturday.
Nice.
Saw my friend's band, Daisy Picker.
Damn.
They were great.
Oh, I loved your Rotations episode.
Yeah.
By the way, I literally haven't seen you since you did that.
Oh, damn. That was ages ago.
Yeah.
Yeah, with my friend Fanula. She did a beautiful set on Friday as well, which I went and saw at the Thornbury Bowls Club.
Oh, stunning. We love a Bowls Club gig.
Little gig weekend. Last night, I watched Free to Air TV.
Nice.
First time.
As you should.
And a David Attenborough doco was on.
Stunning.
And I bawled my eyes out.
Oh, yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Sobbed hard.
Yeah. Was he talking about, like, the climate crisis and stuff?
Yeah.
Yeah, and you're just like...
I cried so hard.
Yeah.
My partner was kind of laughing at me about it. They weren't sure if I was laughing as well, but it was sobbed.
It's real.
It was really, really sad.
I mean, he's such a good storyteller as well.
Yeah, he's amazing.
You really get into it. I don't know if you've seen that. Was it like the Greenpeace ad that he narrates?
Oh, maybe.
Where it's like a fishing trawler, and they have a camera in the bottom of the, like, the big net that trawls the bottom of the ocean for fish.
Mm-hmm.
So they put a camera in that, and you can see all the fish being dragged. And then
yeah,
David
and
Attenborough
is
narrating it, and yeah, similar thing. I think if that was longer, I would cry too, to be honest.
I cried. And then another one played, and it was about woodlands, and I cried about woodlands as well.
Yeah, more woodlands.
Oh, my God. All of these birds were just, like, roosting in this monoculture of this plantation of pines, because that's all they had.
So sad.
And it was so sad.
Yeah.
Yeah. But it should be motivating instead of, you know, devastating. It's hard not to get nihilistic about it, but it's...
Yeah, of course.
But it's also, you know, good to be like, yeah, let's go do some stuff about it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hey, I just wanted to say a quick shout out to all the ASU workers who are currently on protected industrial action across, was it Hume, Marybeck and Darebin councils, I think.
Oh, yeah. Nice.
really, really sad to see that, at least in Merribeck, they're trying to break the picket line by bringing in scab garbage collectors.
Oh, yeah.
I saw it on Facebook, and, like, so the Labour MP for, I don't know, one of the areas is, you know, posting, like, we're going to bring in, like, more trucks so people... And then so people can still have their garbage collected. Then all of the comments are literally just like, we don't care about having our garbage collected. Pay your workers properly.
Mm-hmm.
So that was really nice to see, especially on Facebook.
Yeah. Where you usually don't... Facebook is so
I was expecting people just to be like, our garbage hasn't been collected in 4 days and now I have one extra bag of garbage. Anyway, so solidarity with people at the ASU.
Hell yeah.
Maybe we should do our headlines or talk about
Yes, we should do that. Do you want to talk about
Let's talk about what's coming up on the show first before we do our headlines, sorry.
That's okay.
Before we start yapping even more.
We can yap.
So after our headlines, we are going to play... We're going to have a conversation with Zoe Simmons, who is a disability advocate and a journalist. And we're going to be talking about the task force dedicated to cutting the NDIS, which was announced last week. But the task force was actually formed back in January. It's known as the Razor Gang. Zoe and I will be talking about that, as well as sort of how it feels to... I feel like every budget... For the past few years, they're just like, we're going to cut more and more from the NDIS.
Yeah.
And, of course, add more to defense spending. But anyway, so that's happening first up at around 7:15. And then after that, we're going to hear a conversation or a part of a conversation that Sally from Out of the Pan had with Bonnie Hart, who is, a longtime intersex advocate and peer support worker. And they're talking about legislation that was passed in Victoria a few months back about which banned medical intervention on people born with variations in sex characteristics. We obviously did an interview about that legislation back when it initially passed. But, I was here last night and I was speaking with Sally about it. And it's such a huge piece of legislation that I think it's important to air something on it again. Mm-hmm. And then, do you want to talk about what you have?
Yeah. My friend Tessa from Friends of the Earth, and used to be a host, maybe still is, of Out of the Blue here at 3CR, did a story about community members who were able to successfully stop work for 3 days last week, and over 1,300 people contacted decision makers to condemn the clearing of the Mount Macedon snow gums. Nonetheless, in a tragic escalation of events, an exclusion zone was enforced around the cross, and on Saturday morning, the trees were felled. Devastated community members held a vigil for the snow gums on Sunday and continue to condemn the actions of Parks Victoria and the Memorial Cross Committee.
That's so sad.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, because she messaged me last week saying that she had this... yes, Tessa is still a host of Out of the Blue. Sorry, Tessa. What was I saying? Yeah, she messaged me last week saying that she had this story and I was excited to air it this week, and then I messaged her about it last night and she said all the trees were felled on Saturday, so...
Damn.
Yeah.
What else? What do we have after that?
Yep, sorry.
That's okay.
A sleepy day. And then we're going to be listening to the first part of a conversation that Amy had with Kay on the DID Awareness Day special from the 5th of March last month.
And that's Amy Chiara, the host of the Kill Your Lawn and Kick Your Fence show.
Yes.
We should say for context.
Yes.
But yeah. Cool. Let's get into our headlines, huh?
Let's do it. Some folks know about it, some don't. Some will learn to shout it, some won't. But sooner or later, baby, here's a ditty, say you're
You're listening to the Monday Breakfast Show on 3CR Community Radio 855 AM. These are the news headlines for Monday, the 20th of April, 2026. Civil liberties advocates are raising concerns about escalating police powers following recent protest crackdowns, warning that the right to assembly is being eroded across so-called Australia. Liberty Victoria says recent scenes, including the use of force and move-on powers, reflect a broader shift towards criminalising dissent. Liberty Victoria President Gemma Carafella said expanding police authority does not improve safety, but risks undermining democratic freedoms. Carafella says, quote, attempting to restrict protest and handing police broad powers with reduced accountability does not keep anyone safe, Carafella said, end quote. Advocates say the crackdown is part of a wider pattern where governments respond to political pressure not by addressing root causes, but by limiting the space for people to speak out.
Also in news this week, health and medical students are calling for urgent reform to unpaid placements as new costing reveals it would take $290 million to extend financial support to those currently excluded. Palliative Care Australia has backed the calls to expand Commonwealth's PRAC payment, warning that financial pressure is pushing students out of the sector. National Policy Director Josh Fear said the current system is unsustainable and inequitable. Fear says, quote, when students are required to complete unpaid placements, it can force real financial stress and put completion of training at risk, end quote. With reports that many students are going hungry during placements, advocates say the issue is not just workforce supply, but access, equity, and those who can afford to become a healthcare worker.
And finally, in the news this week, a new national network is being launched to support grassroots organising for renewable energy as communities push for a faster and more equitable transition away from fossil fuels. Backed by Friends of the Earth Australia, the initiative aims to connect local organisers, share resources and build collective power across regions. The network, developed through the Yes to Renewables campaign, is designed to support community members already working on the ground, as well as those looking to get involved in the shift away from fossil fuels. Friends of the Earth wrote that, quote, we know that real power lies with people working together. This network exists to connect, empower, and uplift organizers and the communities they support, end quote, Friends of the Earth said in their announcement. Organisers say the transition to renewable energy must be community-led, arguing that without grassroots involvement, the shift risks reproducing the same inequalities that have shaped the fossil fuel economy. Also, I just wanted to flag on that civil liberties headline that more than 20 people were arrested in Queensland over the weekend because of the state's controversial laws banning the phrase from the river to the sea. So it's really interesting. They had a flash mob of, I don't know if you saw this, yeah, Hannah, they had a flash mob with, I think it's a John Farnham song, which has the words the river to the sea or something.
Mm.
And it's so just like, there's a video of all these people in like wigs and stuff, and they're all waving Palestine flags. And that was fine. Like, I don't think anybody got arrested there. But then I think the day after on Saturday, 20 people were arrested because of either signs or that were saying from the river to the sea. Pretty scary times. And I was going, before the show started, I was going to write something up about the US seizing an Iranian ship, but at the time, the only source of that information was Trump. So Donald Trump, of course, has said that the US has seized an Iranian cargo ship, but now it has apparently been confirmed by the US military's Central Command that US forces operating in the Arabian Sea enforced naval blockade measures against an Iranian-flagged cargo vessel attempting to sail toward an Iranian port. So apparently this ship was issued multiple warnings over a period of 6 hours and did not comply with US orders, after which time it was fired on. This is according to Al Jazeera. The ship is called the Tuska, and the crew have allegedly failed to comply with repeated warnings over a 6 hour period. And since that didn't happen, apparently, several rounds have been fired into the ship's engine room by the US military. So just a quick update, I guess, more on that as the story develops. So, as I said, we were going to write something up on it before the show began, but it's still breaking, so stay tuned.
What's taking place in Palestine is horrendous.
Here are some ways that you can keep yourself informed and involved.
Listen in to Palestine Remembered every Saturday morning at 9:30 a.m. or listen to the podcast.
Join the APAN mailing list at apan.org.au for updates, news about actions you can get involved in, and where you can donate to provide humanitarian assistance.
Listen to other news and current affairs programs on 3CR that also cover Palestine.
The oppression of the Palestinian people has been going on for 75 years. It has to stop. You can be part of making that happen by staying informed and active.
APAN is a proud supporter of 3CR.
...3CR is about community, and we welcome your participation at the station.
3CR is open to a wide diversity of volunteers and is a great way to connect with Melbourne's activist community.
Have you ever thought about volunteering, doing a reception shift, getting a program on air,
training in radio skills, or contributing to one of the station's committees?
There are many ways to be involved at 3CR.
To find out more, go to 3cr.org.au and get in touch.
You're listening to the Monday Breakfast Show on 3CR Community Radio for the 20th of April. It is almost 7:20 in the morning. I had to do a quick look. Last week, it was revealed that the federal government had formed a task force back in January known as the Razor Gang, tasked with cutting the NDIS to make it, quote-unquote, more sustainable ahead of the May budget. The revelation attracted scrutiny from independent MPs in the halls of Parliament, but as usual, much of the reporting and potentially even the budget consultation themselves have failed to elevate disabled voices. As such, the Monday Breakfast Show is now joined by Zoe Simmons, a journalist and disability advocate, and we'll be talking about the Razor Gang and accessing the NDIS in general.
3CR.
So why don't you start off by telling our listeners a little bit about the task force?
So they've called this task force the Razor Gang, and like that name in itself is super terrifying. It doesn't really sound good, but the intention is basically to cut it. And that's very bad because disabled people rely on this to live. NDIS cuts literally mean lives are taken, so it's a very stressful time for the community, and there's been a lot of secrecy. They haven't really been working in collaboration with disabled people. The NDIS was founded on the idea that there should be nothing about us without us, and they've been doing this almost entirely without us, and we could together, make so many positive changes to the NDIS that could save money, but instead they're just pitting the public against us.
So I was going to ask about what you think of it, the fact that it wasn't publicly announced. Do you think that that sort of betrays the ideas behind the NDIS and its mission?
I think it really does betray the NDIS and the people who made it happen and our community, because it's scary. We haven't been collaborated or consulted with in the way that we should. So many people don't know what's going on, and in reality, we won't know until they announce it. But the little whispers that some people have heard in the community are concerning, especially when you've seen how much misinformation and hatred towards disabled people there's been in media recently. It's, you know, I think they're purposefully wanting to make people angry so they can make these cuts and people won't care, which is very sad. We should all care about disabled lives. And a lot of people are like, oh, well, why should our taxes pay for that? Your taxes pay for roads, for schools, for, you know, Medicare, for all these things, and you don't have a problem with that, but you do have a problem with disabled people living? Yeah, it's not great.
And what role do you think that mainstream media plays in creating this pressure onto the federal government?
I think the mainstream media could do so much positive change if they actually had disabled people talking about this, not just people talking for us, and we could challenge a lot of the misinformation. Like, you've seen some of the media reporting in the... I can't remember the acronym. Oh, my gosh, sorry. The Australian Financial Review, it's been really quite horrible, you know, just spreading blatant lies about the NDIS, like wording it a particular way to make people mad. And I think that's really, like, you can see what the public sentiment is in the comments section on Facebook, that it's really horrible. And I get a lot of these people as well in my comments that say that we don't deserve to live, that we should just stay in our houses. It's not our responsibility to, you know, make sure disabled people can live. And that's really crappy, because 20% of the population are disabled, and you can become disabled at any time. You could need the NDIS at any time. So, you know, don't care about disability rights until it directly impacts you, because one day it will. You can become disabled at any moment, with a sickness, with an accident, with war, with just time. So it's really disheartening to know that so many people have these negative opinions, and I don't think they would if they actually had disabled people in their lives or heard stories from disabled people, rather than these really awful narratives about us without us.
It seems every budget over the last few years, this sort of scrutiny on the NDIS and every smaller scheme within it. You know, I'm thinking about arts therapy, for example, being questioned within the media as to why it was relevant or helpful for disabled people. How do you think that atmosphere of scrutiny has affected how people view the disabled community?
I think it's caused a lot of people to view disabled people as a burden, which is not true. We are not burdens. We deserve to live. And with support, we can. With access, we can. With inclusion, we can. So it's incredibly disappointing that a lot of people just don't seem to care, or worse, blatantly want harm to come to our community, or don't think we deserve care. But imagine what it would be like if you suddenly couldn't cook, you couldn't clean, you couldn't leave your home, you couldn't breathe, you couldn't eat. You would really want some support in that scenario. And the reality is, when these cuts happen, that's the kind of things that people can't get. I have friends that can't afford their feeding tubes and products. I have, you know, we've seen lots of cases in the community where cuts have led to death, but yet children have even died in the NDIS. So, and that's blatantly because cuts happen and we can't get the support. So it's very scary to not know what changes are happening, but knowing it's coming from this frame of negativity, and knowing that there's a lot of negative media pushback. There's a lot of things saying like, oh, NDIS has lost its social license. Oh.
What does that mean by the social license?
Maybe don't quote me on this, but I think that is a comment on the perception of the NDIS for everyday people don't really understand it. And with all this misinformation going around, people are just thinking that, you know, we just get the money in our pockets and spend it, which we do not. It's incredibly strict to get on the NDIS, and it's incredibly strict with what you can actually use it on. And we know changes need to be made. Like, participants could tell you 1,000 things that would help, but the thing is that they're not listening to us.
On a wider note, do you think that the scheme's reputation has changed since you started accessing it?
I only became an NDIS participant maybe 2 or 3 years ago, but I've definitely noticed a significant increase, particularly in the last 6 months, surrounding narratives and disability in media. Like, you'll see so many horrible articles if you just Google it, but, you know, saying that we're burdened, saying that, you know, I can't remember exactly what the line was, but saying $12 billion was spent on walks and haircuts, which is not true. It is for support for us to leave our homes and maybe do things like that. It's not paying for haircuts. It's not paying for movies. It's paying for a support worker to help us with that. And even that is challenged, so it's really crappy to think that people don't think we deserve to leave our homes. And to people that think that, I would like to challenge you to stay at home and never leave your house and see how you'd feel then.
Do you find it also affects your ability on how, or even the disabled communities, how they view themselves, like whether they should deserve to live a life with dignity?
I mean, it has a huge impact on people's mental health, because these narratives saying that we're burdens, that we don't deserve to live, that we're strains on the budget, that has an impact on how you view yourself. And our world is quite ableist. Ableism is often internalized. And I think with these narratives swarming around, some people would pick up these ideas that we don't deserve to live. But that's just not true. We deserve to live. We deserve to be part of the community. We deserve accessibility. These are basic human rights. And, you know, Australia is a very wealthy country. We can afford to do these things. We have great programs in other areas, and the NDIS is world-leading. We can't change that and smash it to smithereens. Of course, we know there are some changes we can make that can make things better, but it needs to be done with us and not from this place of anger and hatred, and that is really concerning.
Yeah, I was reading a few weeks ago that if Australia taxed fossil fuels, they would have enough money to continue growth of the NDIS budget. Do you think it's intentional that mainstream media often looks at the NDIS first instead of just questioning whether we should be taxing corporations that pay no tax, or fossil fuels companies that also pay no tax, instead of the NDIS?
It seems absolutely wild to me that NDIS and disabled people being able to live is the first place that a lot of people look for budget cuts. There are plenty of ways we could save money. Look at what we spend on, like, subsidies and tax cuts for big corporations and billionaires. That in itself, they wouldn't even notice the tax cuts being that rich. But yeah, I do think it's just absolutely absurd that we first go into making disabled people have harder lives and less access to things that are our basic human rights and that help us live and help us work. And people talk about NDIS expenditure as if it's a bad thing, but for every dollar spent, it delivers 2.5 times in economic benefits. What other industry is doing that? There are so many ways that we could save money. We could look at, you know, the tax cuts and subsidies for fossil fuels, for billionaires, for big corporations. We could look at politicians and their ridiculously large salaries and bonuses. They're like their travel allowance alone. There are plenty of places that we can make savings that don't involve impacting on the human rights and ability for disabled people to live.
Well, that's pretty much all we have time for, Zoe. Is there anything else you wanted to add?
I mean, I might say one more thing just quickly. The NDIS is so good for not only disabled lives and families and loved ones of disabled people, but it also benefits small business owners. It benefits, you know, parents that need flexible work, and it benefits small businesses. It gives so back to the community, and it allows disabled people to then live and also be able to have a chance to do things. I would be stuck inside my house not ever being able to eat if it wasn't the NDIS, and I'm so grateful. And I think we need more people in the NDIS, not less, because there are so many people who don't get the support they need or enough support to live. So I really do hope that we can change this sentiment and this negativity around the NDIS and challenge these narratives. So I really appreciate journalists like you that are like, yes, let's get disabled voices. It's a nice change.
Of course. Well, thank you so much for joining us on the show, Zoe.
Thank you so much for having me.
Public transport's great.
What's not great is that unless you've got a radio with you, you can't listen to 3CR when you're on it.
Until now. The Community Radio Plus app lets you listen to us wherever you are.
Get on board and search Community Radio Plus wherever you get your apps.
Friday, May 1st, is May Day, International Workers' Day. Join 3CR all day in our 50th year of coverage in solidarity with the continued struggle for labour rights and fair working conditions for all our communities around the world.
We got May Day specials from regular Friday shows and special presentations from 3CR's programmers from across the grid. For more info, head to www.3cr.org.au/May Day 2026.
Friday, May the 1st.
Tune in all day right here on 3CR.
You're listening to the Monday Breakfast Show on 3CR Community Radio. That was Zoe Simmons, who is a journalist and disability advocate, speaking with us about the task force known as the Razor Gang, which was formed in January, but only sort of revealed in the media last week. And they've been tasked with sort of cutting the NDIS to make it more quote unquote sustainable. Just a quick correction on the stuff I mentioned about the fossil fuel subsidies. The subsidies in the federal government's fuel tax credit scheme, which cost $10.8 billion in the 25 to 26 year period, is actually expected to outstrip spending on the NDIS. So apologies for that, listeners. You're listening to the Monday Breakfast Show. Now we are going to hear a conversation, or part of a conversation rather, from Sally Goldner and her show Out of the Pan, which aired yesterday, where she spoke with Bonnie Hart, who's a longtime intersex advocate and peer support worker, and they are talking about legislation passed in Victoria which banned medical intervention on children born with variations in sex characteristics. As I said at the top of the show, we did speak with Dr. Sean Mulcahy from Equality Australia about this legislation when it was initially passed a few months back earlier this year. However, the legislation is just, yeah, I feel it's so hugely important for people born with with sex characteristics yeah, it's definitely worth playing a separate interview on the issue. As always, you can listen to more from Sally on the Out of the Pan show on Sundays from 12 to 1 or at 3cr.org.au/out of the pan.
Bonnie, welcome to 3CR.
Hi, Sally. Thanks for having me. Great to be here.
Absolute pleasure. It was great to see you, gosh, back at midsummer, which seems, well, February, March, 3 months ago. It seems like so much happens. But, yeah, it was good to see you there. And we said, we've got to get you on. And then, of course, the Victorian laws were passed. That is just so exciting. I'm excited and I'm an endosex person. I can't imagine how excited you and other people with variation of sex characteristics must be. I'm going to start by asking, how did you feel when that law passed through the upper house and then is only now waiting for it to come into effect?
Yeah, look, it's pretty rewarding to see something like that happen. It's obviously like getting legislation to protect young people from medical interventions that could be deferred until those children are old enough to make informed decisions about what they want to have happen to their bodies, and to provide people with more oversight and protections is really, I don't know, it's really welcome and has been the result of many, many decades of advocacy and work to bring those issues to the table, have people understand them, and then to try and engage policymakers in order to make sure that those protections are there. So it's really great. And it's great to see community come together and support that. And great to, quite amazing to see politicians across the spectrum support reform in this space. And the level of respectful dialogue, I think, that both houses when the legislation went through. It was amazing to see.
Cool. Well, that was brilliant telepathy, because I was going to ask you about that. I mean, from my point of view as a trans person and sometimes as a bi person, we gays and lesbians, perhaps more so in the past, have faced very disrespectful and political football type of dialogue. But it sounds like, there was, at least there was respectful debate when this legislation went through the two houses of the Victorian Parliament, which is great. That must have been, that must have felt rewarding as well.
Yeah, it is. And again, it's the result of actually a lot of conversations that have been had with different politicians and staffers within government. I think when people really understand who people with innate variations of sex characteristic are and what our experiences of healthcare are like, then things make a lot more sense, A lot of the disrespectful debate is associated with not really understanding or confusing intersex with being something that it's not. And when people do find out, then of course it makes sense to make sure that there are more protections and greater oversight.
Yeah. Oh, look, that is excellent to hear. The thing is, the Victorian legislation is the second of the eight states and territories in Australia to pass laws. The ACT passed its laws, again, time flies, around 3 to 4 years ago, and were first. What were you able to learn from both in terms of the process and the desired outcome in terms of the detail of the legislation from the ACT that was perhaps able to make the Victorian process and outcome a little less of, obviously you had a key template worked out, but, what sort of things changed so there was a bit less reinventing the wheel, so to speak?
Yeah, that's right. And I think, the wheel was certainly invented for the first time in the ACT, and that was passed in 2023. So it's been 3 years since that legislation's passed and came into effect at the end of last year. So, there's certainly lots of learnings that have been along the way. And I think the way that the ACT has worked with Victoria in terms of making their model available, and Victoria's really did, again, lots of consultation with community, with clinicians, with parents, and with service providers, and really tried to build on the ACT's model. So it's similar in the way that interventions when they're ascribed to a person that's not able to provide full and informed consent. That person is a protected person, and then the interventions that they receive need to have a treatment plan that is assessed by an oversight panel. basically. And that panel's made up with a multidisciplinary approach, so it has both clinical expertise, also lived experience expertise, human rights, ethical, bioethics, psychological, psychosocial expertise. And then once those are treatment plans, if they're well evidenced, and once those treatment plans are approved, then there is no, then treatments can go ahead.
Mm-hmm.
So like it's about making sure that everyone knows exactly what they can do, what is within scope and what's not within scope. And that's really around the basis of not creating harm where harm can be, where things can be deferred. So obviously we're talking about deferring cosmetic medical interventions that have no, that don't have a medical emergency associated with them.
Yep.
Yeah.
No, look, it's just so, so excellent to hear because, you know, intersex people have been talking about this for so long, and now, you know, the fact that the next generation will have, well, in Victoria, at least we'll say far less of this happening, if not, I don't know if it can totally prevent harm, but it's certainly got to go a long way. It's just, I mean, it's just much, yeah, it's just too excellent that that's happening. So, you know, and, you know, once, of course, a surgery is done, and if someone, you know, say later on says, well, that's not what I really would have wanted, it can't be changed for a person with variation of sex characteristics externally. And now that that can be prevented, the benefits first to the person are enormous. But what about the benefits to, we'll say, family of origin in this case? That's perhaps an area that doesn't get discussed enough.
Yeah, and a lot, you know, parents play a really big role in our lives as intersex people. Like often it's parents that disclose to us that we have an innate variation of sex characteristic. Or, and the parents are primarily the advocates for their children within a healthcare setting. So supporting parents and making sure that they have access to the resources to make decisions and to understand the information that's being given to them. Because you can imagine when you have a child that's born whose body looks different to what you're expecting it to look or, and you have no understanding, had no understanding about intersex before then, that can be an incredibly challenging time for people to have to try and make sense of not just the medical and scientific side of what's happened, but then also the social side as well. You know, what is living well with that type of body look like for their kid? And how do they talk about it? Who do they talk about it with? When do they talk about it? Lots of big questions. So the legislation itself is about trying to provide more clarity around what treatments are available and what the evidence bases for those treatments are in terms of their efficacy and timing, and also to make sure that those parents have the support, the additional supports of the oversight panel as well. So that's a multidisciplinary approach to making sure that those any decisions that get made in that space are kind of grounded in a rights-based and psychosocial well-being model.
Yep.
As well as making sure that all of the medical needs, when they are like truly medical needs, are met and met in a really timely way. Because, you know, like all people with intersex bodies need access to healthcare. And they need access to the healthcare that they need when they need it. So that then needs to be timely access, and it needs to be affirmative in terms of making sure that it is going to meet the current and future needs of the child.
Yeah. Look, it's just too excellent. I mean, the thing that came to mind. I mean, the birth of a child for parents is obviously, we'll say, a time where there's great anticipation and feelings and emotions, and then to have this the situation of variation of sex characteristics come up and it feels like it's out of left field, there must be huge heightened emotions for the parents at that time as well. And so the fact that they've got that support, I'm just thinking about the relief that must exist for them to know this isn't this, in inverted commas, strange mystery. But, oh no, lots of people have, lots, but what is it, 1.7% at least have experienced this, and you don't have to, again, don't have to reinvent a wheel.
Yeah. Yeah, it's, I think, like most things, it's like if you know that it exists before it happens to you, then it's so much less of a shock. Do you know? Like, that's why visibility and awareness is such a great thing, because if you know that that innate variations of sex characteristics are natural variations of sex characteristics, then that's a much different approach from having something turn up in your life that you just had no frame of reference for or no understanding of. Because, you know, people with intersex traits can live and do live happy, healthy lives.
Yep.
And often if you don't know that beforehand, you can think the worst for your child. Mm. But that's why, again, connection to community and peer support is so important in this space for people and also for parents as well, because that experience of raising a child whose body is a bit different comes with its own set of challenges. And there's been lots of people that have done that before. You know, like,
yep.
Again, there's lots of wheels out there that you could have a very functioning cart to be able to bring excellent information and lots of fun into your little person's world.
Thank you.
You're listening to the Monday Breakfast Show here at 3CR, and that track was Brand New by Daisy Picker.
And before that, you heard part of a conversation between Out of the Pan, Sally Goldner, and Bonnie Hart, who is a longtime intersex advocate and peer support worker, talking about legislation passed here in so-called Victoria a few months back, banning medical intervention on people born with variations in sex characteristics. Of course, you can listen to more of that conversation and more from Sally from Sundays at from 12 till 1 or at 3cr.org.au/out of the pan.
And up next, we're going to be hearing a story reported by Tessa Campisi from Friends of the Earth and also host of Out of the Blue here at 3CR. Community members were able to successfully stop work for 3 days last week, and over 1,300 people contacted decision makers to condemn the clearing of the Mount Macedon snow gums. Nonetheless, in a tragic escalation of events, an exclusion zone was enforced around the cross, and on Sunday morning, the trees were felled. Devastated community members held a vigil for the snow gums on Sunday and continue to condemn the actions of Parks Victoria and the Memorial Cross Committee.
What's taking place in Palestine is horrendous.
Here are some ways that you can keep yourself informed and involved.
Listen in to Palestine Remembered every Saturday morning at 9:30 a.m. or listen to the podcast.
Join the APAN mailing list at apan.org.au for updates, news about actions you can get involved in, and where you can donate to provide humanitarian assistance.
Listen to other news and current affairs programs on 3CR that also cover Palestine.
The oppression of the Palestinian people has been going on for 75 years. It has to stop. You can be part of making that happen by staying informed and active.
APAN is a proud supporter of 3CR.
Okay, so we're actually going to play that at the end of the show because a little technical difficulty in the studio once again. The technical difficulty is me and not the studio. Anyway. We're going to be listening now to a conversation that Amy Chiara from Kill Your Lawn, Kick Your Fence had with Kay from the DID Awareness Day special from the 5th of March last month. In this conversation, Kay shares their journey within a variety of different circumstances: homelessness, gender, identity with DID, finding community, and more. We're going to be playing the first part of the interview with Kay, and we'll play the other half on the show next week. You can also find the whole interview from the DID Awareness Day special at 3cr.org.au/DID. AD 2026.
My name is Kay. I'm 28 and I am a multiple person.
How long have you known?
How long have I known? I think I was told about it in 2020 and I accepted it in 2021.
And that's pretty common story. Was it by the therapist?
Yes. Yeah. Clinical psych.
Yeah. And do you still see that psych?
Yeah, I do. I haven't seen him this year yet, busy year.
Yeah. And has your experience been good?
Psychology? Yeah. I think I got lucky in the end there. I will say that I was in multiple different kinds of therapy for years and years and years before that. I even tried equine therapy at one point.
Yep.
The horses did not cure me. But yeah, I found that once I got my diagnosis and I was working on the right stuff, that I have improved in the ways that I've been trying to.
Yeah. And so have you seen it? Have you gotten any other professional help outside that therapist?
Not really.
No.
No.
And how do you, so what are some of the things that work for you in therapy? For example, for me, I've also been very lucky, me and my family in my brain, in our brain, we've been very lucky because we got a good therapist, and that therapist has seen us rain, hail or storm, whatever we can afford, has always looked out for us. And so, we've been very lucky, and she's worked with us to create a safe environment and to work on stability. And she's also had to do learning herself, because like a lot of therapists, you don't specialize in every single disorder. You learn about them, and then maybe you have to get extra training with certain patients. And I was one of them. Yeah. And I'm very grateful that she did that. So I'm curious about what was positive.
There was a lot of financial flexibility. I was under a victims of crime payment plan for my sessions, but
those are limited, I think, aren't they? Because I've been on one too, and yeah,
they are. I was lucky enough to have my psych, who advocated for me in every way possible, who made it. Made space for me to feel any type of way I felt about the diagnosis as well. Like, I wasn't particularly happy about it. I kind of pushed back. He just took care of me, I guess. I was lucky enough that he had some experience with DID before I found him. And when I was diagnosed, he let me figure that out as it came. But, definitely felt like I could come to him with anything. There was no... In the past, I've had trouble, obviously, explaining things from the perception of just one person.
Yeah.
But with Adam, my psych, as soon as I met him, he was using language that made my brain feel included in the conversation. Referring to us as a collective, asking specifically what each individual part felt about even the smallest things.
Yeah.
And remembering that certain parts aren't comfortable with certain questions or things, and just staying on top of that. Really excellent at it.
I've found, I feel like I'm the face of the group, the manager of things, but it's really a we. Lara picks up, my therapist, Lara, she picks up the facial expressions and what's going on, because it's quite visible when we're dissociating or struggling with who's in the driver's seat. And she's gotten to the point now where she can sort of guess who is coming up. And particularly like if it's like, yeah, certain feelings. And it's interesting that I think we have a similar, we've talked before, and we have similar DID where we're more covert than overt, which is most people's DID.
I mean, we're not even really supposed to know we have DID.
Yeah.
Our brain is supposed to be a little better at hiding it from us than it is. But covert is, just like overt, it's lots of different people experience it different way, and doesn't make any of it less or more valid.
But I think the fact that there's this space and room for us in therapy to do that means there's safety there with that therapist, and that the therapist's done something right. Because I've also had experiences Unfortunately, my therapist, I see her via telehealth because we live in different states. Originally, we didn't, but I moved. So we've had to get extra support with the limitations. And the issue that's coming up is retelling our story. We've also had in the past, like, been sort of like someone, like, we had no choice but to go get like help when we were doing really badly at one point. So like someone gave the local crisis team like the information, and so when we retell our story in those environments, we've encountered lots of different people, some fabulous, some just not informed about DID, not really understanding what questions, how they hit, or asking the wrong questions, conflating the alters with hearing voices and thinking I've got schizophrenia, people not believing me and thinking I have BPD. Mm-hmm. It's like, no, we've settled on this. We know what's going on. We have people in our head who sometimes take over, and we're aware of it now. Yeah. Your therapist and mine are clearly doing something right.
Yes.
Yeah. And so what are some of the things that make you and your headmates, I like the term headmates, I don't know how you feel about that term, but how your headmates feel about safety? What makes you feel safe in therapy?
That's a good question. Ultimately, switching and being in the presence of other people while switching has never been comfortable. Not even in therapy. My brain really wants to protect itself from this diagnosis. So I think ultimately, like you said, a sign of me being comfortable is if a part is feeling comfy enough to make themselves known, or even just express an opinion without totally switching. The more little things like that that happen, the more comfortable we are outside of therapy, just living as a system, taking care of each other, staying in communication, making choices together rather than dealing with aftermath. I think the main thing is probably just consistency. Consistency is a safe feeling. I liked with my therapist going in and being allowed to sit down and say, everything is fine, nothing is wrong, and then 20 minutes later actually have a part that wants to talk about what's going on. But for that moment of like being allowed to have everything be okay, even if it's masking. Having the patience for that has always made me feel really safe.
And I think also something we've found is not being pushed. I think some therapies that we've experienced try to push people to come out, which was very distressing and destabilizing. And sometimes my therapist has maybe pushed a little too hard, and we've reflected on that, and it's a difficult landscape to navigate. But you're talking about comfort, and something that we have is that I and some other alters are not comfortable with everyone in our head. And I think something with DID is it's a whole new existential thing to confront, the dissociative amnesia and all that.
The worst thing about it is that it's not just whoever is the host or whatever that needs to confront that. It's every single part eventually needs to come to terms with the idea that they are one part of a whole. And that can be, some parts really don't like to hear it. Other parts totally get it, but they have no emotional connection to it. It can be different for everyone. Having this safe space to even just not switch is honestly nice. It also avoids me having headaches after therapy all the time.
Yeah, yeah, we get headaches too. Yeah. What else supports people with complex trauma and dissociative disorders is structural supports. So broadly in your life, what are some of the things that help facilitate you to do the therapeutic work, but also to just look after yourselves and everything? Like, what kind of structural supports have you felt have been useful? Did the victim's claim help with any of that? Obviously, therapy is expensive. And we also live in a housing crisis and a cost of living crisis and a climate crisis.
All of those crises. Yeah. I was homeless when I had my diagnosis. And I was in temporary housing through contact through Barwon Health. And it had been my maybe third or fourth temporary situation in a few years. So if I didn't have that temporary situation, I would not have been eligible for community housing, which I now have. And I would not have had a safe space to exist. It was still tough at the time while I was getting the diagnosis because it wasn't a safe space. But definitely the housing situation was a struggle. And it would have been so much worse me trying to figure out my... I don't think I would have, honestly. I don't think I would have tried to get diagnosed or tried to understand what was going on with me if I didn't have that space to sort of stand on. I needed stability before I could ask those questions. So that's why it took so long for me.
You need to focus on survival and protecting yourself.
Yeah, I... was also really not well. Before my diagnosis, as I was a very, very sick, sad person.
We were also very unwell. We had last year's broadcast, Kathy called it an unraveling. And it seems to be for a lot of people when the DID seems to be, there's some awareness of something happens around a very difficult time in life, and there's an unraveling. Sometimes it's a specific event. I think it's constantly expanding what that could be as people meet more people and research, blah, blah, blah. So I don't really want to say what that event could be. I've only read one DID book because it's really hard to actually engage with literature. but that one is called the DID source book, and it's a bit of an oldie that I know a lot of people recommend. But that one, even just talking to Kathy last year and just some of the reading that I have been able to do, all videos from respectable sources online, that is constantly changing. What causes unraveling? It's different for different people, different situations, and even the trauma that caused the DID, it's expanded from what it could have, like from, it was pretty narrow in the past.
It's really hard to start doing trauma therapy when you're currently being traumatized. It's twice as difficult. I think my therapist gave me some reading early on. It was some medical journal. I could not tell you the name of it now. It was years ago. But it was just, it was written from the perspective of a psych working with someone with DID. And I was able to relate to a lot of, for the first time really, because I'd read up on DID and a lot of the stuff I was reading didn't align with me. And I thought, oh, well, it must not be that.
And also things like the DSM are quite like clinical.
Yes.
So what is identity confusion, for example?
Help 3CR raise funds by donating your containers. Every eligible drink container that you return to a container deposit scheme recycling point earns 10 cents, which can really add up. 3CR is a donation partner for Victoria's Container Deposit Scheme,
The scheme allows you to recycle selected aluminium, glass, or plastic containers and donate the funds earned to a not-for-profit organisation of your choice. Help us raise funds for the station. Search for Community Radio and choose 3CR next time you cash in your cans. Go to cdsvic.org.au for more information.
You're listening to the Monday Breakfast Show here at 3CR. And before that little CSA, we were listening to a conversation that Amy had, Amy from Kill Your Lawn, Kick Your Fence, had with Kay about DID from the DID Awareness Day special from the 5th of March. We're going to play the other half of that interview next week, or you can find the whole interview from the DID Awareness Day special at 3cr.org.au/DIDAD2026. And up next, we're now going to be hearing a story reported by Tessa Campisi from Friends of the Earth and host of Out of the Blue, where community members were able to successfully stop work for 3 days last week, and over 1,300 people contacted decision makers to condemn the clearing of the Mount Macedon snow gums. Nonetheless, in a tragic escalation of events, an exclusion zone was enforced around the cross, and on Saturday morning, the trees were felled. Devastated community members held a vigil for the snow gums on Sunday and continue to condemn the actions of Parks Victoria and the Memorial Cross Committee.
Early on Wednesday morning, it's cold on top of Mount Macedon. At around 1,000 metres at its highest point, the mountain juts out of the low plains and dry grassy woodlands of central Victoria, creating a refugia for ecosystems that depend on these cold, wet conditions.
As a mountain, mountains have a very significant role in any landscape. They draw the water, they attract clouds, they are always involved intimately in the water cycle. And because it's forested, it also is a refuge for and a place of habitat for many, many, many species. And there are lots of at-risk species.
This is Kate Lawrence from the Mount Macedon Landcare Group, who has lived in the area for over 20 years. She's turned up this morning, along with a group of other community members and concerned citizens, because there's been word that a patch of forest, including rare snow gums and alpine ash, are about to be felled, all to create a view of Melbourne from the Memorial Cross.
So in the 1930s, a man called Cameron, who had a lot of money, who lived just down the way, thought about putting a Memorial Cross here, and he wanted to be able to see the cross from his house. So they built that, and then since the Anzac tradition has grown and grown in its nostalgia, it's become a place of reverence for people to remember the soldiers of the First World War in particular. Unfortunately, there's no recognition up here of the frontier wars. So they now have a dawn service here every Anzac Day, and it's become a really big thing. I've never been to it, but, you know, it's a deeply moving experience, I believe. But around the cross, when it was built, had this viewscape because they cut down a lot of trees. I mean, the entire mountain was denuded. And there's this claim that it's a historic viewscape that is being reinstated.
This historic viewscape, however, is hotly contested. A local who turned up for the protest had done some digging about in the archives and argued that the historic viewscape is not, in fact, about seeing Melbourne from the top of the mountain.
1994, it was gazetted as a war memorial. Later that year, it received the state-level heritage overlay. And when you read that gazettal, it actually states that Cameron wanted the cross to be viewed from a distance from the Calder Highway. And I've looked at the records at the Historical Society, all of his correspondence, and there's never a mention of the view from the cross. It's a modern fabrication. Now, the council, Macedon Ranges Council, did a landscape survey study some years ago. and they sort of categorised the quality and significance of the views. The memorial cross, the cross itself, was of national significance. So when you're approaching it and you look at the cross, that's national significance. The view from the cross was local. And the cross committee, when I tried to tell them about that a few years ago, they exploded, absolutely exploded. But they've fabricated the view from the cross as being significant. They're trying to change history to make it significant, and they're destroying the environment because they want to.
The Mount Macedon Memorial Cross Committee has been pushing to cut down the snow gums for several years now. Kate explained that back in 2023, Parks Victoria had applied to Macedon Ranges Shire Council to get a permit to cut down the trees. However, after public consultation, it was clear that there was fierce community opposition to the clearing, so the council denied the permit.
Parks Vic then took the matter to VCAT. Very strange that Parks Vic, whose statutory obligation is to conserve the natural environment, were applying to destroy it. And then they suddenly withdrew their application at VCAT. And then it's been sort of radio silence for the last 2 years, with Parks Vic occasionally giving information and reassurances of this or that, but it's never been entirely off the table. And then this week we were suddenly told that they were going to be doing it this week.
Once they realised that the clearing of the snow gums was imminent, the community was quick to mobilise.
So today, a group of community members have walked onto the site beneath the Mount Macedon Memorial Cross, which is proposed to be cleared for a view of Melbourne. We're a mix of people from Melbourne and Central Vic and locals to the Macedon area, all of us who love this mountain for different reasons, and we are trying to stop the clearing works. My name's Anna Langford. I am part of the Forest Collective at Friends of the Earth, and I've been involved in the campaign to protect snow gum woodlands for a long time. Snow gums overall are such a threatened tree species that we need to be really preserving these patches that are left in areas outside of the Victorian Alps for, you know, diversity, and so that we kind of keep these different refuges of snow gums protected.
How large is the area they're planning to clear?
The area is 0.8 of a hectare of regrowth snow gum and mixed montane woodland forest. And, you know, it's ecologically, it's quite significant because in all of central and western Victoria, there's only 21 hectares left of this montane snow gum forest. So everything that's left needs to be protected. We really can't just be losing like nearly a hectare for a pointless clearing exercise.
So can you tell me a little bit about some of the threats that are facing snow gums and why this ecosystem is important?
Across all of like the Victorian and New South Wales Alps and areas like this, there's two main threats, and they're both climate change related. The first one is bushfire, which just means like the increasingly intense and frequent bushfires that are happening as a result of climate change. Snow gums don't mind a burn every 70, 80 years or so, but now with warming global temperatures, they're just being hit by fires way too often. In fact, in the Victorian Alps, 90% of snow gum woodlands in Victoria have been burnt at least once in the last 20 years, but there's a lot of areas that have been burnt 4 or 5 times, which is just like completely unsustainable for the ecosystem to be able to, you know, reseed itself. And this area here that we're in was burnt in Ash Wednesday, the 1983 fires, so it is still in recovery from that. And the other threat to snow gums that's really significant and getting worse quite quickly is dieback, which is happening because of a native beetle called the longhorn beetle. And that beetle, even though it's native, it used to only have a very small breeding window every summer of 3 or 4 weeks when temperatures were warm enough for the beetles to breed and then bore into snow gum trunks and branches where the beetles will, you know, overwinter. But now, again, because temperatures are warming, the beetles just have bigger and bigger windows each summer to breed more and more and spread to more and more areas. So as a result of that, we're seeing like huge swathes of snow gum woodland in the Alps wiped out because when the beetles bore into the trees, they effectively ring bark them by cutting off their like water and nutrient channels. And I believe that's happening already to a small extent on Mount Macedon, but nowhere near as bad as other areas of the Victorian Alps.
As Anna says, these ecosystems are unique, they're rare, and they're actually in pretty good nick here, as a health assessment by local ecologists found back in 2021. Many of these snow gums are more than a century old, having resprouted from lignotubers after the Ash Wednesday bushfires in the 1980s. And so they still provide hollows and nectar, vital for native birds, mammals, and insects. The local community has been adamant that they don't want a view. In fact, as Kate Lawrence emphasises, they don't even really need another view.
I do really understand when you come up a mountain. I love coming up mountains. I love mountains. That's why I live near a mountain. I love the viewscape from a mountain when you can see very, very far. So we're not saying you shouldn't have a viewing platform up here. There's already one at Western Point. It looks west. You can go to Mount Tauranga and look west as well. You know, I get that you might want to look at the city, but a platform, when there's 100 hectares already and most of it looks south, it would be a very simple solution, and you could have that viewing scape without cutting down these snow gums. And then when you actually go out to the cross, and it's like this cloistered little nest, it's really very beautiful. And if you can have that as a contrast to the view where you can see everything, and then you come to this place of reflection with this sort of memory of sacrifice and death and war, that's definitely something that's can be done without the destruction. You know, if anything, we must have learnt that sort of wanton disregard for nature, it comes at a peril to our very existence, let alone the existence of other species.
Trans Family is a not-for-profit organization providing a peer support group for loved ones, including parents, siblings, extended family, and friends of a trans and gender diverse person. Trans Family runs discussion groups in person and online. We offer a safe space to share your experiences, ask any questions regarding your situation, and provide peer support. We are especially keen to hear from loved ones in regional and rural Victoria. Donations to Trans Family are tax deductible. For more information, visit transfamily.org.au or look for us on Facebook. Trans Family is a 3CR supporter.
CR, always bringing you the latest union news.
They're coming after us at the moment. They want to get rid of penalty rates, the big push from businesses. They want to get rid of all the things that you and I have fought for.
So there's tens of thousands of jobs gone, contracted out to sham contracting arrangements.
On 8:55 a.m. and on the web, 3cr.org.au.
Could be you.
I was just a lonely girl in the eyes of my inner child. But I could be anything I want, and no matter where I go, you'll always be here in my heart, here in my heart, here in my heart. I don't even have to explain, just leave me alone now. I can't be held, I can't be held.
That was Immaterial by Sophie, and that brings us to the end of the show.
Yeah, so we'll just do a quick rundown of what we had on the show before we get out of here and Women on the Line begins playing.
Yes.
So we started off the show with a conversation with Zoe Simmons, who is a disability advocate and journalist, about the Razor Gang Task Force, which was secretly formed back in January and tasked with cutting the NDIS ahead of the May budget. Then we heard a conversation between Sally Goldner from Out of the Pan and Bonnie Hart talking about legislation here in so-called Victoria banning medical intervention on people with variations in sex characteristics. And following that, we heard a story from Tessa PC from Friends of the Earth talking about the stopping of work and then the clearing of snow gums out in Mount Macedon. And the show ended with... Oh, sorry, it was the other way around.
That's okay. You're slaying.
But the other thing that we heard in between all of that was a part of a conversation that Amy Chiara from the Kill Your Lawn and Kick Your Fence show did for DID Awareness Day with Kay speaking about living with DID and experiencing homelessness and navigating their gender identity and finding community. And that's all we have time for.
Bye, see you next week.
3CR Breakfast would like to thank the New International Bookshop, Melbourne's radical bookstore and venue, for their financial support of this program. You can find Nibs opposite reception in the Lygon Street wing of Trades Hall Carlton. You can buy books online and keep up to date with upcoming events at nibs.org.au.